Hi, I'm Marla Weston. I'm a cloud native architect at Intel.
Hi, I'm Swati Sehgal. I'm a cloud native architect at Intel as well.
And we are here to present This is the Way, a crash course on the intricacies of managing CPUs and Kubernetes. So we want to start from the use cases. We want to discuss how users are using the system. And users invariably want to optimize their performance and maximize the capability of their clusters. So why should you care about CPU management? Well, it depends on if you care about performance. If you have high performance jobs and you need to be pinning your cores in order to get those jobs, optimized. Context switching is expensive, so certain types of operations, you don't want to be going back and forth and sharing your core, you get jitter. And also, you don't want to be swapping memory in and out during a data transfer, which is expensive. Why else should you care about CPU management? Still on core pinning, you don't want to share your CPUs with others. You don't want others having access to your instructions or your memory. You want to maximize your resources available. So some cores in your processor may be more performant than others. So you may want to classify these and choose class A for the more performant workloads and class B for the less performant workloads and allocate appropriately. A lot of, if you're doing mixed use clusters, then you need to be able to basically save your high performant cores for the cases where it matters. You may care about power per watt. This is a big money thing. It's also a green energy thing. You want to be intelligently managing power on your node and where in your processors. Power is one of your big costs in running clusters. So users very much should be caring about this. You also want to choose a CPU at the performance you care about. So you may have half of your cores at high performance, i.e. maximum wattage, and the other half at a lower wattage. So you may want to optimize according to what workloads you're running when. You may also have, say, a monitoring job versus performance jobs on the same node. So you want to save your turbo voltage for the CPUs you want performance from. You also may want to reserve CPUs outside of the kubelet for a variety of different reasons. So monitoring, security checks, a little daemon because you have a particular type of process you need for some sort of corporate reason. Whatever those reasons are, you sometimes want some cores reserved. So what can we do today, Swati? So here's our general architecture. So we have node, in each node, you have a variety of Kubernetes components. The core piece handling resources in general is the kubelet. Everything goes through the kubelet. That includes the topology manager, the CPU manager, the device manager, the memory manager. You also, on the master node, have a scheduler, which determines where you're scheduling the pods according to the resources available that are advertised by the kubelet. So with the topology manager, that's more handling your NUMA zones and where your resources are on your node. Your CPU manager manages the CPUs. It determines how to allocate them. Your device manager does the same, but with devices. Your memory manager does the same, but with memory. And Swati will be covering the how these things address some of the use cases above.
Sure. Thanks, Mara. Thanks for the introduction. So I will be covering CPU manager, topology manager, as well as topology aware scheduling in more detail in the next couple of slides. So starting with CPU manager, it is a beta feature that is useful for workloads where CPU affinity and scheduling latency significantly affects the workload performance. So when we enable CPU manager with static policy, it enables us to allocate CPUs exclusively. In order to achieve that, we have to make sure that the pod belongs to guaranteed quality of service class and has positive integral CPUs. Internally, CPU manager maintains logical set of CPUs, which is often referred to as pools. So we have four pools. We have exclusive pool, shared pool, reserved pool, and assignable pool. So the exclusive pool corresponds to the CPU sets assigned exclusively to containers. Shared pool is the one that is allocated for burstable, best effort, and non-integral guaranteed pods. Reserved is the subset of shared pool, which is not exclusively allocated. Assignable is essentially shared minus the reserved, which corresponds to CPUs that will be assigned to the upcoming pods. So let's double click into the policies a little bit. So as you see in the diagram here, we have CPU manager policies, which is non-static, and we have CPU manager policy options. And in the subsequent slides, we'll be going into detail for each of these policies and policy options. So the default configuration of CPU manager is none, which basically enables the existing default CPU affinity scheme, providing no affinity beyond what the OS scheduler does automatically. So if we were to enable CPU manager with static, it allows allocation of exclusive CPUs to containers within pods. If we have CPU intensive workloads that are sensitive to CPU throttling, context switches, or require hyperthreads from the same physical core, then CPU manager with the static policy is what you are essentially looking for. In Kubernetes 1.22, an additional configuration policy option was enabled, and that allows us to fine-tune the behavior of CPU manager's static policy. This feature itself has graduated to beta, but certain feature gates have to be enabled to access these policy options, and those correspond to the maturity level of the policy option. At the moment, we have two policy options. The first one that you see here is full CPU, full PCPU only. And the second one is distribute CPUs across NOMA. So the full PCPU only is an option that is beta. It is visible by default, and it allows us to make the behavior of latency sensitive applications more predictable when running on systems where hyperthreading is enabled. We might want to guarantee that no physical core is shared among different containers to meet applications' latency and performance requirements. And with this option enabled, the pod will be admitted by Kubelet only if the CPU request of all the containers can be fulfilled by allocating full physical core. If that is not possible during admission time, the pod would fail with an SMT alignment error. So the second policy, as I mentioned, is distribute CPUs across NOMA nodes. By default, this policy is disabled, or sorry, this policy option. The CPU manager will pack CPUs onto one NOMA node until it is filled, and that is what the default behavior is. And any remaining CPUs simply spill over to the next NOMA node. And this can cause undesired bottleneck in parallel core code, as this type of code tends to run only as fast as its slowest worker. So with this option enabled, developers can ensure that all the workers run equally well on all the NOMA nodes. And this improves the overall performance of these type of applications. We also have the ability to explicitly specify a list of CPUs that need to be reserved for system or Kubernetes processes. CPU manager, when enabled with static policy, manages a shared pool, as I mentioned previously, that initially contains all the CPUs. And we can configure kube reserved and or system reserved. And those are the set of CPUs that are excluded from the set of CPUs that are exclusively allocated to guaranteed pods. With this particular option, you can specify explicitly the set of CPUs that you want to reserve for Kubernetes or system processes. And this particular flag actually overrides kube reserve and system reserve options. So in summary, CPU manager can be configured with policies like none or static policy, or it can be used to fine tune the behavior of static policy with policy options. And this allows performance sensitive applications to gain access to exclusive CPUs at a container level. there's currently no way for CPUs to be allocated at a per pod level. In addition to that, there are security implications as well. We cannot guarantee full security for a particular container or a pod. In addition to this, CPU manager provides hints to topology manager, so all the resources can be NUMA aligned. So let's talk about what topology manager and how topology manager, which talks to the different resource manager. The topology manager is a qubit component that coordinates with the other resource managers, the CPU manager, device manager, memory manager, and helps us extract the best performance out of the underlying hardware. It aligns all the resources of pods that belong to all the quality of service classes. It's not like how it was in CPU manager that we were only able to assign exclusive CPUs in case of guaranteed pods. Here it works for all quality of services. We have the ability to configure these policies and scopes for different resource alignment requirements. So for example, the scope allows us to define whether we want to do resource alignment at a pod level or a container level. In addition to that, the policies allows us to define the node level policies corresponding to the level of strictness on how we want to align these resources. So we have none, best effort, restricted, and single NUMA node. In scenarios where topology manager is unable to align topology of the requested resources based on the configured policy, the pod is rejected with topology affinity error. And if the pod is part of a deployment or a replica set, it results in a series of pods that are created because the subsequent pod ends up with topology affinity error as well. So that is currently a known shortcoming of topology manager. And we are trying to address this problem as part of topology aware scheduling work. So despite the topology manager enabling topology alignment, Kubernetes default scheduler lacks knowledge of resource topology and can lead to unpredictable application performance. In general, underperformance in the worst case, complete mismatch of resource request and the kubelet topology manager policy. So essentially, the scheduler places the pod to a node where it's destined to fail. This happens mainly because the scheduling decision that is made is without understanding the underlying hardware allocation and at what level and at what NUMA level the resource have been allocated at. So essentially the pod requirement that has been made cannot be met on a particular node because of the topology manager policy that has been configured, and the scheduler lacks visibility and essentially it degrades the performance. So in order to optimize the cluster's performance, we need to solve this problem and make a topology aware scheduling decision considering the underlying hardware topology and the resources allocated. So Red Hat, Intel, and Huawei have been working as part of a working group to solve this problem. And in order to better understand the components of topology aware scheduler, let's understand the behavior of the default scheduler itself to get a baseline. So if we have a particular pod that is requesting a bunch of resources, the request goes to the API server, and the scheduler is the component that's responsible for assigning the pods to the node. So it gets information of the nodes, it gets information of the underlying pod, and from the node, it gathers information, how much allocatable resources I have, and how much the resources are being requested by the pod. So basically, it runs its filtering and scoring algorithm to determine a suitable node that can, you know, fulfill the resource requirement of that pod. And then it essentially binds that pod to a node. So the binding is essentially adding the node name to the pod spec. The moment that happens, the kubelet on that node picks that pod up and starts performing the resource allocation corresponding to the resources that the pod was requesting. So this is where topology manager comes into picture. Here, the topology manager, which essentially is like an admission hook that runs and tries to determine whether that pod can be admitted or rejected. In scenarios where it cannot admit it, the pod gets rejected. So as I mentioned, as part of the working group, we had to create a bunch of additions to some of the existing components. Some of it required us to create additional components. And like, as you see here, the first component that was created was, or that was enhanced was pod resource API. The second one was node feature discovery. The third was topology aware scheduler plugin. And we had to create an API as well so that this communication could happen between these two components. So in order to make the scheduler intelligent, what we had to do was to expose the information that it was lacking through CRs. And then we had to enhance the scheduler logic itself so that it had the intelligence to make the right decision now. So that's where these components come into picture, and they're solving those and basically filling those gaps. So just to quickly go through what these components are, pod resource API is an endpoint for pod resource assignment. It is the API that was enhanced to add support for CPU IDs and device topology. And in addition to that, we added an additional endpoint to obtain allocatable resource information. Node feature discovery, it is, we needed a daemon that runs in the background and exposes the resource topology information through CRs. Signode recommended that we try and consolidate this work with NFD itself, given that NFD is a node fleecing agent that exposes hardware capabilities in the form of labels, annotations, extended resources. So exposing hardware topology through CRs was just a natural next step. We introduced a software component called NFD Topology of Data that collects information and essentially exposes this this information, basically does the resource accounting logic, determines how much resources are available on a per NUMA node, granularity, and exposes them through CR. So that's when the topology aware scheduler plugin comes into picture, and it makes the topology aware scheduling decision using those CRs that NFD had created. So in the previous flow that I had shown you, the pod gets created. In the pod spec, we specify that we want to use this particular scheduler plugin to schedule our pods, and the scheduler gets the CRs corresponding to the node in addition to, you know, the resource requirement of the pod. The scheduler binds the pod, but now it's aware of what the underlying state of the nodes are. So it knows how to place that particular workload. So once the pod places the workload, the important thing to note here is that topology manager still runs its alignment logic, and essentially what we are doing is making the scheduler more intelligent and hoping that the allocation that happens is more topology aligned. So I think that was a complete overview of topology manager, CPU manager, and topology aware scheduling. I'll hand over to Marlo now for us to go through some of additional resource managers that we have.
So in order to solve the power issue outlined above, where people care about performance per watt, we have a Kubernetes power manager that allows you to change the wattage according to particular profiles, either at the container level or at the node level. If you go and check out that project, which is linked here, and hopefully you have access to the slides, you can go look at that directly. Your other option with all of this outside of the current Kubernetes mainstream and external resource managers like the Kubernetes Power Manager is to write your own, because there's no current ability to handle, for instance, a mixed CPU need and a variety of other use cases. Your other option is to change the CPU sets behind the scenes on the node directly, which isn't an ideal way of handling it, but maybe what you need to do until we get some solutions going forward. Our next piece is how to get involved in the community. Swati has been involved in the community longer than I have, so I'll let her introduce.
So a lot of the pieces that we spoke about today have been are part of different SIGs. So Kubernetes has a lot of special interest groups, but the components that we spoke about today were part of SIGNODE, SIG scheduling, as well as a working group that we had created for topology aware scheduling. So if you want to get engaged, do get involved, and we had to go through the process of enhancing some of the components, and we had to follow the process of how do you create an enhancement? How do you add a feature? How do you update the documentation? So we had to go through and consult Signode at every step of the way. And there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And we are looking for contributors, reviewers, approvers. So anyone who wants to get involved in the community at any of these six, please get involved. Here are some of the links that we have. Another way of getting kind of quick response and getting in touch with active community members would be through Slack. So we have Slack channels for Signode, Sig Scheduling, and Topology Aware Scheduling.
I will add that all these communities are incredibly friendly. They aren't adverse to new people who aren't particularly experienced. So I do encourage you to get involved. And that includes our talk. Thank you, Swati, for speaking with me. I really appreciate it. And we hope to see you soon. And
okay, thank you for this interesting talk. We just have a couple of questions afterwards. So my first question is just a general thing that was already answered in the chat, which is, do you have any examples of use cases and deployments? But I saw that a document was posted in the chat, so that's basically already answered. And then another question is from Chris Edsel, is how can you expose to end users a trade-off between max performance, best performance per watt, and minimum energy, which was already also answered partly in the talk, but maybe you can elaborate on it a bit.
I can elaborate. So we don't have actual numbers yet on how much you can save, et cetera. So you'd have to use the power manager in order to play with those numbers. As far as if you're working in the public clouds, you're not going to get those numbers because they really don't like users playing with their CPU frequencies, which, you know, it's reasonable. So if you're doing your own custom on-prem system, that's the place to start playing with the performance per watt. But performance per watt is a big deal in the large scale clusters because people like saving money and being good to the environment.
Another question is from Kenneth Hoster. To what extent is the Kubernetes community aware of these performance aspects currently? Do people actually care much, or does mobility of compute win over performance usually?
I can take that to some extent. So I think in terms of like compute mobility, so a lot of it, Kubernetes community is at an early stage. So a lot of it is about enabling those features and then evaluating the performance. When it comes to, say, CPU management, the first step was to be able to enable, essentially allocate exclusive CPUs to workloads. And then there are bespoke use cases that need to be enabled for, you know, a combination of CPU types, allocating those to workloads. And that's what the direction the community is going. We are talking about enabling plugins in CPU management. And I think we are at a very early stage in terms of, you know, evaluating the performance of containers and CPU management per se. We are at the stage of functionality. But like, if you want to compare allocated behavior of workloads that are allocated exclusive CPUs as compared to CPU workloads that are not, there's going to be significant difference in the performance. Would you like to add something there, Marlo?
Yeah, I'd like to add that AIML is starting to be transferred to the cloud. And anytime you start to look at training jobs, they look a lot like HPC jobs. So I think as that gains popularity, the network, the CPUs issues will have to be handled. We have another one on CPU pinning, which I think is yours, Swati.
Yeah, there's one more question just asked. Is there a way to tell container which CPUs it is pinned to?
Yeah, so you can identify using C groups on the node which CPU a particular container is pinned to. So if it's allocated exclusively, I mentioned at the talk about different pools. So if a container has requested exclusive CPU, you'd see, for example, it requested two, you'd see CPU IDs corresponding to the CPUs that are allocated to it. And if you've requested, if it hasn't, you'd see the shared pool. So you'd see like all the other CPUs that are not allocated to exclusively as part of the C groups.
Okay, thank you for the answer. There's only one more thing, which is just to say that the slides will be available soon once they are uploaded in the FOSDEM system. I don't see any other questions at this point. So we can thank the speakers again, and we'll have a little break before the next talk starts then. If there's any more questions you haven't thought about yet, can always ask them in the chat, and I'm sure our speakers are happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.